the Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
We're going into the final half an hour of the Devil's Advocate radio show this afternoon. My name is Jim Santel. We have said a goodbye to Brian as he heads out for the evening. Merry Christmas to you, Brian. We're joined by Evan in the studio here this afternoon. Glad to have him with us as well as always. Right before the break, we were talking about some additional instances of bad conduct by members of Congress, including Marjorie Taylor Greene and others who may have, Kevin McCarthy, who may have in fact engaged in obstruction of justice in connection with the January 6th investigation. Let me throw one more in there, which is no less serious, arguably even more. We all remember the story from just a couple of weeks ago of Representative Paul Gosar, who published online an anime version of himself and AOC and the President of the United States of America, shown quite literally assassinating her, threatening the president. And of course, the response by the House of Representatives was to censure him, to remove him from his committee posts. That is a significant thing to do at the congressional level. At the same time, in the context of our overall theme, doing enough, send the message that kind of behavior, that threatening behavior, needs to stop to deter him and also deter others who might do the same kind of thing. Consequences for that kind of behavior. I look at that once again. I identify in the federal code those provisions that do in fact make it a crime to threaten the President of the United States of America. That kind of thing, again, not only should be subject to censure, but should also be a subject of review by the Department of Justice. That's a crime. That's a crime when you engage in that kind of conduct. And as I said before, with respect to the things in the Mueller report, if you or I were to engage in those kinds of threatening behaviors to federal officials, to anyone out there, we would likewise, at a minimum, get a visit by federal authorities, state authorities. Paul Gosar should not simply walk away from this with a censure. And note in the context of deterrence, what happens afterwards? What is his response when nothing happens to him? He publishes it again. And arguably engages in a second instance of criminal conduct. And so the latest example, if you will, of the need for responsible people in government and all of us committed to the future of our nation to demand more from our government, perhaps the Department of Justice, others in Congress, to respond to the bad behavior, to do it timely, to ensure that it doesn't happen again. We've got a couple more callers on the line this afternoon. Don from Madison, you're calling in. Delighted to have you with us.
I would ask, the question I have of you as a former U.S. attorney is that the law is always subject to humans. You know, from the Supreme Court down to the local police officer, you know, when someone decides to charge somebody for a crime or not. I mean, that's subject to human beliefs. I mean, it's not illegal to not charge somebody. So my question to you is is there a better way of doing that? I mean, you as a former U.S. attorney, can you list off a number of crimes that you've seen Donald Trump commit in public? And if so, the fact that he hasn't been charged for them says we already live in a banana republic. If our politicians commit crimes right in public, no one's there to charge them at all. And the crimes are committed, you know, from top to bottom. And that's a banana republic where the leaders... leaders and their friends never get charged with crimes, and everybody else, their enemies, do. You know, all the way down to people who are threatening election officials' lives, and the police don't investigate them. I mean, that's so disheartening as a person. You know, that's my question to you. The human factor is so huge. You know, is there a better way of doing it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great question. It really is a terrific question, Dodd. I appreciate you asking it. And you're exactly right. This is still ultimately a human endeavor, right? I said at the outset of our afternoon together that, you know, all criminal prosecution is human tragedy. And I mean that in the broadest sense of the word, not only for the people involved, the defendant, obviously, the victims, especially the people who are prosecuting. It's all human tragedy. The human piece of it cannot be overstated. And yes, indeed, you're making not subjective assessments, but you're making what you like to think are objective assessments of whether or not these particular facts are sufficiently compelling and known, the witnesses are sufficiently clear, and the documents are obvious, that you can support a conviction, a trial, beyond a reasonable doubt, to 12 members of a jury, right? And so that's the overall assessment that you undertake. They're undeniably, your point is so well taken, undeniably there are circumstances where one prosecutor might view situations somewhat differently. To answer the second part of your question, however, when you have, going back to the very first comments of the afternoon, when you've got a president who is speaking to Lester Holt, and as Brian replayed for us this afternoon, admitting to firing the investigator, that rusher thing, as Donald Trump said, I fired him because I wanted the investigation to stop. That is one of the six, seven, or eight things that Bob Mueller specifically identified, including things with Don McGahn, with others inside the Department of Justice. Yes, his Attorney General at the time, Jeff Sessions. That's one of the things that specifically is not only the subject of his report, but could in fact be the basis for HR. The investigation. And we also know that there are more than a handful of people who have said, no, we're not cooperating with that investigation. And here again, deterrence to some extent, but perhaps not as effective as it should be. Perhaps the most notable person who has not cooperated up to this point, of course, is a fellow named Steve Bannon, a former senior advisor, not in the White House employ at the time of January 6th, summoned to appear before the committee, did not do so. So a pretty clear case of obstruction of justice, if you will, contempt of the Congress is what the Department of Justice ultimately charged him with. And here's the downside of that. As we have discussed before on this program, he is under indictment right now. When is his trial happening? It's happening in July. Probably will be convicted, I suspect. Probably will take an appeal of that, maybe go to the Court of Appeals for a review of that sentence. It's highly likely that if, in fact, he is judged guilty, we presume him innocent in our system, a judge guilty, if there is, in fact, an appeal of that likely conviction, that will happen about a year from now. And so the question is this the most effective way of sending that deterrent message to other people who are out there, other people who are also the subject of potential testimonial appearances in front of the committee? It sends a mixed message at best, right? That you can thwart the purposes of the committee, and yes, you will be indicted. Is that a low impact effect? Not at all. That's a big deal, and no one wants to be indicted in this country. However, you also wonder out loud if there could be other remedies that this committee could pursue. We know as well that Mark Meadows has also been referred now to the Department of Justice. That, frankly, is a tougher case, right? Because Mark Meadows, in addition to not appearing on the specific date of his testimonial deposition, has also provided information. He did cooperate. We've got a lot of information not only from his book, but also other things that he has provided about what was happening on January 6th. An awful lot of stuff that implicates him and others in this conspiracy, if you will, to overthrow the government. And at the end of that sort of cooperation arc, Mark Meadows backs off and says no more cooperation. And so he now gets referred to the Department of Justice as well. We will see what Merrick Garland does with that particular case. As I indicated, even though the committee did an excellent job explaining why that is also contempt, that's also obstruction of the sort that we've chatted about already this afternoon, the reality is that case, too, if it is indicted, is going to get a resolution sometime in 2022 and far down the road. And why do I raise all this? Well, we talked about this a little bit before. There are many other witnesses out there, right? There are other folks who are out there. We've got Rudy Giuliani. We talked earlier today about the fact that Michael Flynn, as Mark indicated in our previous segment, he has today filed a lawsuit against the committee in an attempt to try to stop it from doing its work. Others have done the same. Roger Stone and others have likewise tried to stop the conduct of this committee. It may well be, that the committee will refer other people to the Department of Justice. I've advocated that while that is a good thing, that sends a message, yes, indeed, that the committee is doing its work and is serious about going ahead and getting this testimony. Nonetheless, there are some other remedies out there. One of them, as we've talked before, is this inherent power of the Congress. And there is legislation pending to sort of provide some rules and regulations around that. We know from a case in 1821, another one in 1927, the United States Supreme Court has authorized bodies of the Congress, the House in one case, the Senate in another case, to enforce its own subpoenas. Quite literally, to go out there, direct the sergeant at arms to pick up someone who is not appearing, who is thwarting the purposes of the committee, who is engaging this kind of obstruction of justice. And again, to the extent that we want to send messages about what happens to you, what your consequences are, if you don't comply with the most basic requirements of due process, of the rule of law, of a subpoena properly issued by a House committee, that is one remedy that I suspect is perhaps being discussed, but should be and at the forefront of those discussions if, in fact, this practice goes ahead. You plainly have people who are indeed cooperating. Others are saying to the committee, we're not cooperating at all, and they are principals. There's no doubt about it. Their principles. One of the things that I would advocate for is a consideration of all these kinds of options out there to ensure that if you do in fact mean to thwart the purposes of the committee, there are consequences for that beyond simply being indicted by the United States Department of Justice, as horrific as that can be, because that doesn't produce anything more immediate than a trial and perhaps a conviction down the road. So again, we're taking your comments, your questions all afternoon at 844-967-2789. We're talking about consequences and deterrence this afternoon. As long as we're talking about the January 6th commission and the committee itself, the House Select Committee, also note that one of the principal treasure troves, as it's now being called, is still in litigation. This is a good thing, aggressive action by the United States Congress to try to get these documents, plainly things inside the White House, kept as official records of the president on January 6th, before and after that date as well. We know well that Judge Chutkan, yes, the same judge who sentenced Robert Palmer to the greatest sentence to this point in, among all of the insurrectionists, she, a number of weeks ago, did issue this judgment indicating that the documents should be produced. The Court of Appeals has taken that on. Likewise, issued a very extensive memorandum order indicating that those documents should be produced, likely headed to the Supreme Court. Once that is resolved, that once again will be a good mechanism to go ahead and get that message out there that the committee will not be stopped in its search for the truth as we go forward here. So we'll look forward to, in 2022, not only the further resolution of that issue, but dispositions with respect to all of these witnesses who are coming before the committee as the committee itself, the members of the committee, explore this more, both publicly and privately. I mentioned before that one of the other big questions, one of the head scratchers that's still out there, is whether or not the Department of Justice itself is looking at individuals who are responsible for conspiring together to bring this all about in January 6th. I want to talk more about that and the possibility of sending some deterrence messages, some consequences for that conduct as well, right after the break here. Again, we're taking your questions, your comments, 844-967-2789, here on Devil Radio 92.7, Devil's Advocate, talking this afternoon about criminal justice and Washington, D.C.
Given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power.